A story told by an Anishinaabe elder. He told us that before the white man came to Turtle Island, his people had their own way of praying. It involved turning their heads skyward, searching the heavens with eyes wide open and raising their arms in a gesture of greeting and friendship. He told us that they had prayed that way for centuries, and it seemed to work because everybody had a pretty good life here on Mother Earth. Then the white man came, and he had a different way of praying. Instead of turning his head skyward, he turned his head down. Instead of holding his arms out, he pulled them in tight and clasped his hands in a teepee shape below his chin. And instead of keeping his eyes open, he held them firmly closed for the whole prayer. When the indigenous people saw that, they decided to give it a try. So that's what they did. They prayed, head down, hands clasped, and eyes closed. When they finished their prayer and looked up, however, all their land was gone. So that's why he told us they went back to praying in their own way.
The Truth and Reconciliation Report of 2015 detailed what happened in the residential schools for First Nations children. These schools were mandated by the Government of Canada and largely contracted out to be run by the churches. The contents of that report are gruesome in terms of both individual and cultural degradations and losses. The United Church of Canada and the other churches have apologized for their role in running the residential schools and for the long-lasting trauma caused by them. That was our first step in our shared journey of reconciliation. As Canadians and as members of the United Church of Canada, we are morally bound to continue that reconciliation journey. One small way that we had of doing that was for about 10 of us last spring to participate in a six-week book study on Indigenous Healing by Rupert Ross. Indigenous Healing focused on three big ideas. The first was looking at basic understanding shared by Indigenous peoples. The second was the sources of harm and the far-reaching consequences of colonization. And the third section of the book was a look at some examples of healing from an Indigenous perspective. None of us claims to be an expert at all, but rather a humble student, desiring to learn so that we can first understand and then hopefully participate in being part of the healing that our country and our church both need. We would like to share with you some of our learnings.
Good morning. I'm the first speaker on what I have learned by reading Indigenous Healing. And the thing I learned was the importance of our worldview as a collective. Just let's look at the definition that's on the screen. A worldview is a set of beliefs and values that are honored and held by a number of people. A worldview includes how people interact with the world around them, including land, animals, and people. And from this reading that I did for 6 weeks with Susan and Pat, I learned that worldview, my worldview, is very important. It's also very complicated. It's also very convoluted. It's also very ambiguous. It's also very difficult. So let's look at the first part. Our worldview is a set of beliefs. Our worldview is a set of beliefs that are deeply held within us. They are shaped by our family, our culture, our religion, and our education. They are shaped by our culture, the dome that which we live. It happens to be a... And here we are. But we are shaped, and we have to, with our worldview, look at how we were shaped. I have to look at how I was shaped. I was born in Canada. I was born in the 1940s. I was born in Penticton. I was born into a very conservative area. I was born where people had certain beliefs, and I was taught those beliefs. And do I still believe them now? That's what I learned from Indigenous healing. And then I have to look at my family. My family happens to be a white family, middle class, not that well educated, hardworking, didn't question very much, had a lot of biases. Worldview. And then I have to look at religion. I was raised in the United Church. I was married in the United Church. I didn't do very much thinking about any of the teachings of the United Church. But with my worldview, I have now, and I still am. And this core is my deeply held set of beliefs and values that I have to explore. Each of us has to explore. What are they? Because each of those values and beliefs determine how we interact in the world and how we interact with each other. Then these all have to go back together, which I'm not going to do because it'll take forever. But I have to put this one back inside this one and this one back inside, because this here, hopefully, over time changes. I grow, I learn. And this one here may seem the same, but it's changed. So go back to the definition. I learned about worldview as a set of values that are honored and held by a number of people. But they are deeply held, way inside this person here. And I have to work so hard to uncover them, to search, to seek them out. And they're a collection of attitudes and stories and expectations about the world around us, from which we inform our every thought and action. Every thought and action. That's what I learned from reading Indigenous Healing by Rupert Ross. Three questions I'm going to ask you. You don't have to do a think, pair, share. You don't have to talk to anybody. I'd just like you to sit with them. Question number one. What words would you describe, you use to describe your personality? This is called an attitudinal worldview. It's a worldview that affects us deeply, because how we think about ourselves determines, again, how we think about others, how we interrelate with others, how we act towards others. Question number two. What are your core beliefs when it comes to politics and economics? This is called an ideological worldview. And there's so many ideas about ideological worldviews. We see them all around us. We see them in the States with the Republicans and the Democrats. We see them here in Canada. We see them in Europe with the war between Russia and the Ukraine. We see them manifested because we have to go through this deep, deep journey of thinking about what do we really have as our worldview that wasn't imparted on us by the culture we live in, that wasn't imparted on us by the certain family we lived in, or the religion. Question number three. What are your beliefs about God and spirituality? This is a religious worldview. All of those worldviews make us who we are today. And that's what I learned from reading Rupert Ross, a very big learning. So look at the picture there. Look at it really closely. There's a worldview present in that picture. It was a Canadian worldview that covered all those people there. Every one of them, whether they be white or indigenous. And in that worldview, we see RCMP officers. We see nuns. We see priests. Ripping Indigenous children away from their parents to send them to residential schools. That was our worldview. It has to be examined. It has to be looked at. Can I have the next slide, please? So to look at worldviews, if you look at the ego on the right, the Western European, let's take a look at it. It's very hierarchical. Now, this is a very much a generalization, but we'll start with a generalization. And at the top, we have a Homo sapien. Looks like a male Homo sapien. At the top. On the left, we have the indigenous, called Echo. Look at the Homo sapien. It's in the circle. It is a circle. It is interdependent. Very different worldviews. So, Bruce, can we have a little dialogue?
Sure.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that good that there can be... Bruce, you have to start because we switched around.
Well, it seems like you're suggesting that there are many different truths. Is that right?
Yeah.
That what is true depends on our individual experience? But I don't think that can be, because, you know, there's only really one objective truth based on science and observable evidence. Isn't that right?
So you don't think that there can be many different truths, only one truth?
That's the worldview I grew up in.
Well, can we agree that the land is sacred, Bruce? That it is a gift from our Creator?
I don't know about that, Nancy. The land and its resources are for us to extract and develop as we see fit.
But our happiness, Bruce, our happiness and our comfort are measured by the quality of our relationships with each other and the earth, aren't they? The quality of our relationships with each other and the earth, surely.
It's all about successfully achieving our goals, isn't it? That's what makes us happy.
So amassing wealth is for the good of the whole community.
Well, my family and I come first, I'm sorry to say. My wealth is for me.
Difficult conversations.
Learning about this piece of Canadian and church history is exhausting and demoralizing. But I want to share a quote with you from a well-respected First Nations author, Richard Wagamy, who says, "You can't undo the past. You don't have to feel guilty about the past. You don't even have to apologize for the past. All you have to do is say yes. Yes, this happened, and we can start there." So yes, let's start there. What did happen? There were about 140 residential schools in operation in Canada from the 1880s to the 1960s. Clearly, there were a variety of experiences and practices, and some of these were far worse than others. But the common denominator was one of taking the Indian out of the child. Children were taken from their homes and communities with little or no chance for connection. They were not allowed to speak their language with their friends or siblings. They were not supported with loving supervision, and they were sometimes subjected to the atrocities of medical and nutritional experimentation, as well as physical and sexual abuse. They were totally disconnected from their own worldview and family dynamics of their own culture, and they were subjected to a rather warped variation of Western culture. Many children died of disease or mistreatment, and we have recently seen the findings of unmarked graves. Many families and communities completely lost touch with their children, and they received no information when the children went missing or died. The individual and collective stories are heartbreaking, and we wonder how this could have been allowed to happen, and indeed, how it could have happened under the umbrella of Christianity. One author has said this about the residential school experience: when your innocence is stripped from you, when your people are denigrated, when the family you come from is denounced and your tribal ways and rituals are pronounced backward, primitive, or savage, you come to see yourself as less than human. That is hell on earth, that sense of unworthiness. That's what they inflicted on us. I cannot imagine growing up in hell. I cannot imagine how I could have become a loving, successful adult, able to be a wife, a mother, a grandmother, an employee, a community member, if I grew up in hell. I am sure we have today among us many stories of heartbreak and disappointment, and these are not to be in any way minimized. But the impact of consistent, relentless denigration is one that thankfully most of us have been spared. A question that is sometimes heard is, why can't they just get over it? Why has the impact of residential schools had such a devastating effect on whole communities and affected three generations of families? In response to this, Rupert Ross suggests that we look at three questions. What happens to children's personal development when their youth is spent in circumstances of helpless captivity, where their race and culture are consistently denigrated? Are there emotional capacities that remain undeveloped or underdeveloped? What kind of adults do these children become? What kind of parents? How are their children and grandchildren affected? As many of you have done, I have had the experience of visiting ancient sites in other cultures and have been in awe of the artwork, the architecture, the literature, the government, as well as the cultural and trade networks that existed throughout ancient history. Just this past week in the Archaeological Museum in Istanbul, while viewing the Greek and Roman antiquities that go back to 500 to 800 years before the time of Christ, I was suddenly struck with the thought of why don't we give this same respect, the same curiosity and admiration to the history of indigenous peoples? Why did Western culture so easily dismiss the richness of the indigenous cultures that were encountered in North America, Africa, and the Pacific region, for example? I think I know the answer to that, and I suspect you do too. I conclude my remarks with the humility I brought to opening this discussion. We have so much to learn.
What is the point of prayer and meditation?
What is the point of prayer and meditation, Bruce? The point of prayer and meditation is to bring you closer to the great mystery.
So I can understand it?
No. So you can participate in it.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
But what's the point of all this ceremony and prayer, this damn hard work?
To awaken from the dream.
What dream is that?
The illusion that what we see is all there is. That this physical world is the real one.
Are there higher dreams then?
Higher dreams. Yes. Yes. There are higher dreams. Dreams of unity over aloneness. Dreams of blessings over fears. Dreams of freedom over blame, unlimited spiritual possibility over limited material gain.
You're telling me all that is possible?
I'm telling you, Bruce, to awaken. All is possible once you do that.
So, why am I alive?
Because everything else is.
I mean the purpose.
Bruce, that is the purpose. That is the purpose. To learn about your relatives.
My family?
Yes, Bruce. The moon, the stars, the rocks, the trees, the plants, the water, the insects, the birds, the mammals, your whole family. Learn about those relationships, how you're moving through time and space together. That's why you're alive.
So what's the greatest teaching in life?
You'll laugh at me, Bruce. You have to make your own moccasins.
My own moccasins? You're kidding, right?
No. You make them from the hide of experience. All the places that you have walked. You sew them with a thread of the teachings. The lessons embedded in all the hard miles. You stitch them carefully with the needle of your intention to walk a spiritual path And when you're finished, you realize that Creator lives in the stitches. That's what helps you walk more gracefully.
I think I need to learn how to sew. So, Pat, let's make sure that people can hear you. Yeah, so get it right
can
up
you
to
hear me?
Get it right up to you here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Is that good? Yeah. So, Pat, what touched you most about this book as you reflected on it?
What touched me was the fact that we're reading the book and discussing it, and many books like it. So others must be doing it too, and that's bringing attention to this whole mess with the indigenous people and gives us courage to do something about it.
Hmm. Do you think it's important for us to acknowledge the land every week?
Yes, I do. It acknowledges the people who walked here 10,000 years before us. It encourages us to appreciate and care for the land.
Hmm. That different relationship that the indigenous worldview talks about, right?
Right.
That we're part of it. Yeah. So after reading about some of the just horrendous impact of residential schools and this legacy, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is we have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission now, which brings it to people's attention. And under that, we have our Orange Shirt Day. We're thinking about the people who survived residential schools and who didn't survive and didn't come home.
And that gives you hope?
It gives me hope that we are paying attention and want to do something about it, want to improve the conditions.
Right. Yeah, and do you see us doing something now?
I do. I see gatherings of Indigenous people sticking up for the lost children to bring them home and for the women in Winnipeg who are left in the landfill, and non-Indigenous people standing with them, and all kinds of people putting shoes on the steps of the art gallery to remember the children. Mm. I think that the more we get involved, the more people care, the better things we'll get.
Amen. Well, thank all of you and the group that you were part of for taking the time to read and learn and share together and share with us. Thank you so much. There's a very old Dakota hymn that we have learned in the United Church. Many and great, O God, are your works. Let's stand if you're comfortable and sing in praise of Creator. invite Susan to come and actually, we'll do the offering first, of course, yes. So, there are many ways that we offer ourselves, particularly in working for justice and healing and reconciliation.